Today's program was brought to you by VisitNapaValley.com, the official page for travel to the Napa Valley, America's legendary wine, food, arts, and wellness capital. For more information, visit www.visitnapavalley.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning. You're listening to In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli, and In the Drink comes to you live from Roberta's here in Bushwick, Brooklyn. We tape at 10 a.m. on Wednesdays. We're coming to you a little bit early today, but you can also listen to all of our previous podcasts on www.heritageradionetwork.org. And iTunes as well. When I'm not hosting In the Drink, you can find me at one of our restaurants where I'm the beverage director of three downtown New York City restaurants and a wine bar, Dell'Anima, Lartuzzi, La Picho, and Anfora is our wine bar. And hope you enjoy the show. I'm very excited today. We have someone I consider a friend in the industry, one of the regulars at our restaurants, and someone who is unequivocally the best dressed sommelier in the in the game, but also one of just the truly nicest guys. We have AJ Ojeda Pons, the wine director from the Lambs Club, here in the studio with us today. AJ, welcome to In the Drink. It's great to have you here.
Thank you very much. Good morning. I'm very happy to be here.
Really excited to have you in the studio. AJ, like so many people in the industry, you got into the industry by accident, right? You didn't think it wasn't your initial goal. I know that you studied music for a period of time.
That's right.
Can you tell us about how you went from someone who was studying music to now the wine director of really one of the most serious wine programs in New York City? You have just an amazing wine list.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Let's see how I can make this long story short. While I was studying music, I guess throughout the 90s, I was deep in the conservatory, studying piano, composition, playing bassoon, doing lots of things. So one of my initial dreams was to sort of like become an orchestra conductor, and so I had the thought of going to Germany and visiting conservatories in Germany to see what the music life was there. And I took this trip in 1999, 2000, so where I traveled throughout Germany in Frankfurt, and I went to Stuttgart, visiting all the I had friends actually that were there. But then after a while, I realized that it was going to be much harder for me in terms of the language and the transition from. So I came back to New York and moved to New York with the thought that I could do that here. Funnily enough, I ended up working at a music post-production studio as a sound engineer, which allowed me to learn the other parts that I didn't learn in the conservatory, all the technical parts. And then September 11 happened, and we were all out of jobs, and we ended up going around finding a place to work in, and ended up going to Tribeca Grill, and started there as a reservationist. Being there, learned a lot. Mm-hmm. Met David Gordon, Yoshi Takemura, Patrick Capiello. I mean, so many people and it was just so interesting to see what they were doing in their programs. After working, then went to Gotham Bar and Grill, and then I met Michael Nelson, Michael Greenlee, and then after that, I went to work at Morel's, which had a huge wine program, and I pretty much became sort of like the jack of all trades. I was a maitre d', the assistant general manager, and then I had to sort of like learn all this wine program that they had.
So you were initially drawn to restaurants that had special wine lists, special wine programs. Was that an intentional decision, or was that, I realized that working in music production in New York, at this time in my life isn't going to be possible because of what's going on in New York and the economy. So I'm just going to find a restaurant job. Or were right. you drawn to restaurants with
no, I felt like I, you know, since a young age, I had a lot of sense of hospitality, hosting people, doing dinners, like having the good combination of like wine and food. And, you know, I, even before I got into wine, I was the kind of person that my friends always gave the wine list to in a restaurant to pick the wine. So I felt like I always had an ease of, you know, selecting mm-hmm. a good wine.
You grew up in Venezuela, right?
That's right.
Was wine part of daily life?
Well, not on a daily basis, but in my family, you know, there was always wine for special occasions. I mean, I always remember my mom and my dad talking about a good Puy Fuissé or a Chateauneuf du Pape. And yeah, so those were like the real special wines. Even when we go out to eat and have lunches, or they will always order a good bottle. You know, they introduced me to like Chilean wines even, and Malbec, and things that perhaps I had no idea.
Wow. It sounds like you had pretty sophisticated parents, pretty worldly parents. Okay. I mean, most of my friends' parents were not, you know, none of my friends' parents were drinking that sort of stuff at that time. So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I guess so. It's true. I mean, I really appreciated that, the fact that we were able to learn from them that that culture.
Yeah, and it's something that you hear, going back to your music experience, it's something that I've heard repeated, and I might have even said this myself, without fully grasping it, that there are certain similarities between wine production and music production, or wine appreciation and music appreciation. How does someone who has extensive experience in both view that subject?
Well, I think I've made that comparison before, because when I see the work of the winemakers, and you know, I see, in the same way how an orchestra conductor would do, you have to select certain things and give certain commands at the right time to create, in the end, harmony.
Yeah. Oh, that makes a lot of sense. What do you think of some of these growers like Bruno de Concilis in Campania, who are playing music either to their vines in the field, or more commonly to actually the wines as they're aging in the cellar, and feel that has some kind of impact on the wine?
Well, it's like two passions. You know, music is a passion and wine is a passion. The two together, I think they blend really well.
I always felt that it affects the winemaker, and it makes a happier winemaker to have the good music around. So, so that in turn will help the wines taste.
Yeah,
better.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if that's true. I have a little speaker in my wine cellar where I usually play a lot of like classical music. So I imagine the wines are a little happier every time I do my cellar work. I have lots of classical music playing, opera, music. Early music.
Yeah, and now with your music appreciation, I mean, does your involvement with music at this point, is it just listening to classical music in the cellar, or are you still working on composing and producing?
Yes, in the little time off that I have left, I spend some time writing music. I mean, there's always music in my head, and I guess it's just sort of like a natural thing, but yeah, I still spend some time at home either playing the piano and writing music on the software, and you know, there's always something. I'm always trying to like improvise new melodies, new mm-hmm. things. It's a little bit of a fuel, I guess. And it centers me.
How have you translated that that experience to the way you might approach wine list or service or your job as it is?
That's hard to say. I would say perhaps the way I appreciate all the sounds in a different way. You know, you can appreciate mm-hmm. the whole ambience of the restaurant. You see everything as part of a whole orchestra.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The restaurant is an orchestra in itself. There's so many parts to it too.
Yeah. Also, I think it's important for, you know, anyone in the restaurant industry, or anyone in any job that is you work a lot of hours, a certain degree of stress, to have something that is an outlet that, you know, as you said, music centers you. And
right.
So to have that where you can escape it for a moment.
Yeah, and when I'm doing that, there's nothing else, you know. It's just I dedicate to it, and I'm not answering my phones or emails or anything like that. So it's, I just immerse myself in it.
Yeah. And so after you worked at Gotham with Michael Nelson, who I think is one of the nicest people in this whole
great
industry.
Guy. Yeah.
he's fantastic. Now works for Verity Wines.
Yes, that's so, right.
What was your position there, and what was your next step?
Well, after that, there was a Morel 900 that was on 20th Street. After that, I went to, when that restaurant closed, the general manager introduced me to Laurent Torrendel, and I went to open BLT Fish and BLT Prime. So then I worked with Frank Dexheimer, another great guy. So, imagine all the people that I've seen and all the learning that I've gotten from them to this point. With Fred was great. And this guy, lots of energy, super excited about wine, and I learned a lot from him. In terms of the service and just you kind of suck up all that energy that he has and information. He's just a wealth of information.
Amazing. And Fred Dexheimer, for those who don't know, is a master sommelier, who for a time was in charge of the whole BLT group across the country. He was based in New York, but now he's moved down south.
That's right. I think he has his own company. Well, the Juice Man.
The Juice Man
for all of us who know. And after that, I went to work at Public. I think that was one of the greatest programs that I also worked with because, first of all, I was exposed to a lot of the Australian, New Zealand wines that I had not seen before. And, when you're... This is all before I started studying wine or getting all my thoughts in wine and my certifications with the WSET and everything. But so I got an incredible amount of exposure. I had to become the ambassador of all the Antipodean wines. And at the time, Public had a little wine bar, which was called the Monday Room, which was where I was working. Yeah. So I worked in the Monday Room, but Ruben Sanz Ramiro and then with Jesse Webster, who also ran the beverage program. And the Monday Room, so I had one part where I worked solely with the Australian and New Zealand wines. And then in the Monday Room, it was all the off-the-beaten-path grapes. There was nothing that was mainstream. So for me, that was just super, super interesting. I got acquainted with a lot of grape varieties that I had never heard before, regions and winemaking techniques. And it was incredible. So, and it was sort of like a small plates and wine bar, which was great too, to play along the... food, wine, and pairing part of it, especially with rare grapes.
Yeah, and was your position there to do? Were you doing wine service? Were you helping to curate that
list? Yes, I was working for the Monday Room, curating the list, and then I just was sort of the wine director for.
Yeah, and
for
Ruben Sanz Ramiro, another great talent in the industry. He worked at Veritas before going to
that's
Public,
right? Yeah, so imagine all the people that I mentioned. It's like if you would put them all together in a room and we would all sit down and talk, it would be it's a white noise of wine information.
Yeah, I'd love to share a couple of pizzas with them at Roberto's bunch of wine on the table. That's a killer group of people.
Yeah.
And then was your next stop to the Lambs Club?
The next stop was the Lambs Club, yeah. The Monday Room had closed and they were doing a renovation. They were turning it into the Daily. And then I started the Lambs Club. So I've been there for the past 4 years. So I came in 2011 in September. And I've been there ever since.
So. Yeah. So you've worked at quite a few... places with great wine lists, wine personalities. If you were talking to, it seems like if you were talking to younger AJ, you would have said, "Do what you did. You went, you did the right path." But what advice would you give to young sommeliers who want to curate to be a wine director like you are?
Stay informed, read a lot, experiment, go out to eat. Try new wines. Don't be afraid of trying new things. There's so much out there. The wine industry, it's so large. There's so much going on in so many different levels. You really have to sort of just immerse yourself again, in it, just as you were listening to something great, huh?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. We ran into each other recently at the Grand Cru tasting, and we tasted a few wines together. And I remember leaving and thinking, wow, AJ still has so much curiosity, such an open mind. I mean, someone who's worked in the industry and runs this beautiful wine program. I just really appreciated it. I left leaving thinking wow, that is a guy with a super open mind and still you can tell the passion for it. It was really, really obvious to me.
Yeah. I feel I have a lot to learn still. I mean, I never consider that I've learned it all in terms of wine. And I mean, people have heard me say this before, but I always say, as long as people keep on making wine, I'm going to have a job for life. Because it's never ending. Every year it's a new vintage. There's new winemakers, there's new areas, there's new AVAs, there's whatnot. And you always have to continue to like stay on top of it. You know, I subscribe to a lot of publications and I read a lot of like, you know, wine journals and reviews and weather reports, whatnot. But there's always something more. There's always something that you're not expecting that's going to come and you're going to have to learn it.
Yeah. I totally agree. And I hope that is true for me as well, that I'll always have a job as long as people are making wine. All right. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back with AJ, we're going to talk about his wine program at the Lambs Club, which is super impressive. One of the best in town.
Today's program was brought to you by VisitNapaValley.com. Welcome to the Napa Valley, North America's legendary wine and food capital, where the art of living well is defined, and each season holds a story waiting to be discovered. Life feels slower here, lived at a place where tables are set with care. Fine wine and food are created from the bounty of our own vineyards and gardens, and relationships with friends and family gathered around the table are somehow sweeter. When planning a trip to the Napa Valley, we invite you to visit the destination's official visitor website, visitnapavalley.com, or stop by Napa County's official visitor information center, located in downtown Napa, where our friendly and knowledgeable community ambassadors can assist you in creating your own legendary Napa Valley experiences. The Visitor Information Center is located at 600 Main Street in Napa and is open from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., 7 days a week, 360 days a year. Your invitation to experience the Napa Valley beckons. Take a deep breath, lose yourself in our quiet green and golden hills, renew your body and spirit, taste our legendary wines and cuisine, and experience the people who make this valley like no other in the world. For more information, go to visitnapavalley.com.
All right, and we're back with AJ Ojeda Pons, the wine director for the Lambs Club on 44th Street in New York City. I really think it's not only one of the best wine lists in that neighborhood, but really one of the best in town. And I am not alone. Wine Spectator gave them the Best of Award of Excellence, so two glasses. The World of Fine Wine, 2 stars. Wine Enthusiast, top 100 best wine restaurants. So all of these accolades, it's just such a great list. I'm looking through it and there are classics, there are esoteric wines, there's geeky sommelier wines, there's just really solid, well-made wines all over it. I mean, it's hard not to find something to be really excited about on your list.
Thank you. When I first started, the wine director, Jordan Larry, which is another friend of mine, I looked at his room and said, well, this is really amazing. Like, he also had all these eclectic choices. And then for me to, like, you know, learn from him and build up from there was another good experience. In the beginning, I think we had maybe about 300 different wines. I think right now we're over 1,000 different choices. So it's...
Wow. Over 1,000 choices on 60-something pages. And I have to say, though, sometimes on a list that's that large, it's easy to get lost in it. But I think that your list is just displayed really beautifully. It's very, very easy to read.
Thank you. Yeah. The way, you know, I do it is just sort of like there's room for people to find what they're looking for. Including the by the glass program, you know, there's always a lot of wine served by the glass at the Lambs Club. Sometimes we have up to 50 choices, including the champagne and sparkling. And and dessert wines, but because I like to be able to offer a little bit of everything. Sometimes people are not looking to buy a whole bottle of wine mm-hmm. or commit to a whole bottle of wine during dinner, so I like to have a lot of variety on the by the glass list so that there's something if somebody you know is not looking for to drink a whole bottle, they can find that on the by the glass.
And how do you maintain like to make sure that everything is fresh? Do you taste all of the open wine at the end of the night? You have like Grand Cruvé by the glass.
Right, in half bottles, which is great because it allows to like no waste at all. We really see any waste in terms of because the bar is always busy, the restaurant is busy. It's always been poor, so I rarely see any like major waste or anything like that. The good thing about doing the champagne in half bottles is that too is you know you get two glasses and that's that. And
yeah, and that's what we do for Moscato d'Asti and Brachetto and sweet like the sweet sparkling wines. We always right. have those in half bottles at the restaurants.
It's great, especially for a lot of this like premium high end wines that we offer.
Mm-hmm. A lot of premium high end wines. I'm looking at you have a whole page of Corvin wines. Some really exciting wine. Something that we have at our restaurants that I wasn't expecting to see is the La Castellata Friulano. But then you could also get like Vega Sicilia Unico 2000 for that's amazing.
Yeah, that list also is always changing. I always find a lot of like cool bottles that perhaps people want to try or they've heard from before and they haven't had an opportunity. So the Corvin has really revolutionized all of that. You know, you can. It's just we've created like wine flights with the Corvin. It's quite incredible, and we've opened like some amazing wines too. So
yeah, and so you're a big fan. It sounds like Corvin. The other thing that I noticed, you have your sweet wines by the glass right up behind the red wine, so right front and center. And you have a significant selection of really interesting sweet wines, including the Los Bermejos Malvasia. I think that's super interesting. I mean, that sweet wines, I always have a hard time selling them at our restaurants. They don't sell well for us. Is it something that you've been able to sell?
Well, if you actually look at the desserts by our pastry chef Bjorn Butcher, like there's a lot of like great wines to pair with his amazing desserts. But beyond that, I mean, if you think about it, maybe it's not only you or for you that it's hard to sell sweet wines. I guess it's a whole notion, I guess, that sweet wines are not good or they're not friendly. I guess, in America. But I find that to bring them up to the front of the list rather than all the way to the back, it's you put that notion in people's heads beforehand and... and they're incredible. I mean, you know, they don't have to be overly sweet also. That's why I have those choices like the Malvasia, and I have not too old Sauternes or mm-hmm. some things that are blended Semillon Sauvignon Blanc to have a little more acidity. So there are different, you know, things that that put that in the guest mind. Once they start their meal, they're already picking their glass of wine.
It's so smart. It's so smart. Like you see that sweet wine list, and you're like, oh, they have really cool sweet wines, and you remember it back at the end. And I think I would personally be much more likely to order it if just knowing that. I'm looking at my red wine list by the glass. Like, oh wait, they also have really cool sweet wines. I'm gonna order a glass of the Rive Salt at the end of my meal because that's pretty badass. Other really cool thing about your list that I've actually never seen on a list is this end of bin list. So it's bottles with only one left. I think that, you know, I was at a restaurant recently and I ordered a bottle of wine and the server came over and said, "You're in luck. You got the last one." And I loved the way that they describe that, because usually what we do is apologize, say, you know, I'm so sorry, this is or say, you know, this is the last bottle, so if you want another one you can't have it. But it was like, oh, I feel fortunate, I got the last one on the list. And I love the way you described it, and I think that's when you present it like that on the list, you get the same kind of idea.
Yeah, and you know, and I try to keep that up to date at also at all times, because when you go to a restaurant and then, you know, that they don't have that bottle for you, or somebody comes to your restaurant and then you go find in the bottle, and then, it was the last one and we sold it. So I'm able to like move all of those things to a special rack where I keep all the last bins, and then I just list that page. But it's a two-way street, right? Because a lot of the wines are good too. So people are like, are you sure there isn't another bottle that you can, muster from somewhere down there? And I know it's, really, it's just the last.
I love it. I mean, but that also means that that's extra work for you. You need to make sure this is up to date no matter what, because...
Well, it's easier. It's on one page. I can reprint it like any time. And
it's so smart.
Yeah. So, when the thing is like, perhaps some of the wines were the popular wines or, wines that we go through a lot, and perhaps it's the last of the vintage and we can get it anymore. So they get moved to that page.
Yeah. And this at the very bottom says the last bow for these wines. Does that mean that
those are generally wines that we previously poured by the glass, and then the last few bottles we just offer by the bottle.
Okay.
So.
Cool. That's really cool. So, as I said before, you have some, great wines that everyone knows are really great wines, and then some more kind of rare, particular, quirky wines, like a great selection of Jura. I know that that's a personal interest of yours.
Yes, that's right.
How do you kind of strike that balance between, between those two?
Well, let me put it this way, and going back to perhaps of the music, if you were missing a set of instruments in an orchestra, maybe the symphony wouldn't sound so right, right? So you have to have a little bit of everything. I have to have all the wines that people want to drink, and but also like my personal favorites. And at the same time, like from all of what I've learned in terms of all this like rare and obscure wines, I also want to bring those in so I can say, hey, you may have not heard of this before, you may have not tried this before, and guess what? You're going to be really surprised, and you're going to love it, and you're going to be a fan from now on. So it's trying to find all the you fill in all of the little holes, if you may. But I wouldn't say holes because that sounds perhaps negative, but I would say all the special places in the wine list with the cool wines.
Yeah, 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 and especially if you have room for 1,000 wines in there. you can. Oh,
you would be
amount.
Surprised. It's a tiny, tiny room that we get to manage. It's
wow.
Yeah, and it's a small cellar, and think about it. It's New York City. We all have very small cellars, and if I could possibly keep every single wine that I have purchased ever since I started working there, I would, but I would have to have a warehouse the size of Queens just to keep them all on the list at the same time.
And I also wanted to ask about, you have a page that's your Sommelier Spotlight,
right?
About the wines of Ganava, Jean-François Ganava.
Oh, yeah.
These wines are awesome, and your prices are great on them. These are wines that are super hard to find. They're made in such small production, and you have like 12 of them or something.
Thank you. Yeah, they're very, very, very limited, very hard to find, and sometimes I only get like a bottle or two, which... it could be detrimental for the wine list, but I love the wine so much. What he does is just so incredible. All the work that he puts on separating everything in individual barrels, it's just incredible. Like the wines are just, they're singing. They're incredible.
Yeah. They're
whites and reds. There's so many of them, if you think about it.
He has something like 10 hectares that makes 22 wines out of that.
That's right, yeah.
Like,
and it's like 46 barrels, and then he's doing the other project in Beaujolais where he's making some killer Gamays, the two Beauté.
I've never had those. Keep learning things.
Yeah, we got some of the Madelons and the two Beautés. We got them in Magnums even, so... I hope they keep for a little bit to see. The wines are actually aged really gracefully, and they express really, really well with time. So that's another thing, most people don't wait for the wines too much. They're like, when's the next vintage? I want to drink it right now. And that's another reason why I would like to have a bigger space so I can like buy things and store them.
And store them aside, yeah. List a couple of bottles,
right,
and then keep the rest.
Keep the rest.
On the side, yeah. Oh, that would be, that's kind of my dream as well. Not feasible small places.
I don't know if there will ever be a Burns Steakhouse here in New York City, with a wine list like that.
Oh my God. Friends just went down there, down to Burns, and just, I haven't been. That's a dream
it's
trip.
Killer. Yeah, it's,
you've been.
All of the stories that I hear from my friends, and it's just like, you know, it's a dream because this gentleman just purchased all these wines so long ago, and he's kept them ever since. And it's a lot of killer Bordeaux.
It's like
and
the most legendary stuff. I know, yeah, in America, right? And you can get stuff from producers that don't exist anymore, or great producers from 30 years ago. That's just way under market price,
right?
Let's take a trip to Burns, man. I just want to ask about working in a hotel. So Lamb's Club is located in the Chatwal Hotel. Are there any benefits? What are some of the unique challenges and unique benefits to working in a hotel restaurant?
The benefit of working in a hotel restaurant is that there's always guests that we have to cater to, you know, whether it's breakfast, lunch, dinner, and special events. We are close to Bryant Park and Broadway, so we get a lot of visitors staying around that are going to shows, and so we get a big pre-theater crowd.
Great.
In the restaurant, and
it must keep you on your toes. So you
I know. I mean, we're constantly busy. Like even after the theater, we get a lot of the crowds that are coming from the shows, and so we always get the waves of service.
Yeah, that's great. And it's hard for me not to ask about this. You were the GQ and Penfold's best-dressed sommelier last year. Can you talk a little bit about that campaign and what it meant for you to win?
Well, it was a tall surprise, actually. It was a fun thing. You know, I guess it's like the whole package. Somebody approached me and they say, hey, listen, you know, they're running this campaign about the best dressed sommelier, and you're always like sold out with your bow ties and your pocket squares. And
no one approached me about that. I don't know why.
And they were like, you should really think of participating. And I was just like, oh, you know, it's probably, you know, I don't know if I'll ever get to do that. So so we submitted the photos and whatnot. And then I got the call and they say, hey, you're in the top five. And I'm like, okay. And so they say, we would like to invite you to this event, so where we're going to crown the winner. And they rented the Villar Mansion at the Palace Hotel, and they did phenomenal. They brought a lot of great Penfold wines, and we had a beautiful tasting there. And in the end, you know, I got crowned Best Sommelier in America. And I got to open the first Penfold Grange 2010 bottle. It was kind of like a very fun event. So
amazing.
Yeah, and after that, it just kind of exploded. It's been great. We've seen a lot of people coming in to see. And I mean, especially.
I mean, do you find that there's a lot of pressure now? Like, you can't just. Seen you just dial it in. You're always super dapper. Yeah.
No, I don't think any pressure. I mean, you know, this is what I wear every day. It's like sort of like my style. So it hasn't changed much in many years. I just, you know, still doing the same.
Great. Well, you're always looking good, man.
Thank you.
And I just want to thank you so much for being on the show. I think you have one of the best wine programs in town, and obviously one of the nicest guys, and super well dressed on top of it.
Thank you. Yeah, you can come over anytime. I mean, we have a lot of wine to taste, and you know, it's always fun that we can do it there. Okay.
All right. That sounds great. Before we go, I do want to talk about a little event that we're doing here at Heritage Radio Network. This Friday, we're doing the Food Book Fair. This Friday, April 10th, 6 to 8 p.m. at the Wythe Hotel. Featuring authors and HRN hosts. The food's going to be by Dig In, and drinks from the Brooklyn Brewery. And you also hear beats by DJ Spliffington. I hope I got that one right. Yeah, DJ Spliffington. So it's the Food Book Fair at the Wythe Hotel. There'll be some HRN hosts who've recently published books, and other food book authors. It's going to be a really fun event, and hope that you guys can make it. So thanks so much for listening. This has been In the Drink. Thanks to Jory and Jack. Thanks, guys, on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.